You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Come get some. Beware, IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis, Scoop. Sam Claiborne.
I feel like my chair's a little low.
And Tina Amini. You can raise it.
You see what?
I had to lower mine.
If I go any lower, I might disappear.
Well, this is like the tiny side of the table.
Oh, no, I went lower.
How about? I went up a little bit.
Man, right.
GameScoop's canceled this week.
There's so much to talk about this week. We got to talk about Fallout 76 is back in the news again for the usual reasons. We got to talk about a much better Fallout game called The Outer Worlds. But first, let's start with Delay-O-Ween. I think it was Ryan McCaffrey tweeted that the games industry is firing its D-Laser at a bunch of hotly anticipated 2020 games.
Or what's the official name for it?
This morning.
Bombs Drop Day?
Oh, God. The day of the bombs.
That was yesterday.
That's different, yeah.
That was for Fallout.
D-Laser's really good.
The D-Laser is pretty good. That's a Ryan McCaffrey joint. Let's start with the biggest one. The Last of Us 2 has been delayed from what it was like February 20th. Now it's May 29th.
Which is right in that God of War zone.
Yeah.
That and why do you say that?
Because God of War, right? Or it was April?
I think it was April, maybe. Yeah.
I don't know. Like the 3 month delay, like whatever.
Sure.
But what's weird about it is they just announced the February.
After years, you know, the game was announced years ago, a slow trickle of information for years, and they just finally, a few weeks ago, announced this release date. And then to delay it so soon after that, it's like, wow, that's
which
surprising.
Makes me wonder, were they ever confident in that date to begin with?
Sony force their hand to put that?
Which does happen.
Sure, like Naughty Dog and Sony undoubtedly had some uncomfortable conversations over the last few weeks.
Yeah.
Like I told you guys, February wasn't going to work.
That probably, you know, that could have been what happened. And then also it butts up against whatever else Sony has that year, including the PS5. So it's if you have a game out in the beginning of summer, no one wants to release games in the summer, which is dumb because summer is really fun to play video games. I don't know why you guys don't release these things.
Everyone's watching movies instead.
They used to.
Yeah. But then it's just like you have September and then October becomes right up. Like who's going to buy your game if you're putting it out right before the new consoles come out?
Oh, but it's coming out in May. So what?
It is. So I'm thinking of Ghost of Tsushima, which has not been announced as a next gen title. It's like a total, that's the thing that's coming out after Last of Us. So is that going to be a summer game? That'd be awesome.
May is for me the unofficial limit of you can release a game in May and not have people worrying about next gen too much.
Yeah.
After that, it's
you're brushing up way too close.
Maybe it's after E3.
Yeah.
Because after E3, everyone's going to be full on next gen.
We already had the conversation about Cyberpunk being so close to next gen that we might not play it.
And Last of Us falls into that category too. But for me, Cyberpunk is because that game is going to benefit from the hardware and look so beautiful and so amazing on next gen. And Last of Us. Some other games, I don't care about playing Avengers on next gen, for example.
Which is now at the same time as Last of Us, right?
It's Sort of, yeah. Right? I think it's a few days before Marvel's Avengers.
Marvel's Avengers is May 15th.
Yeah.
So okay, May 29th so makes The Last of Us 2 the latest 2020 game that we know of as of right now.
That's great.
Yeah.
What if we can't finish it before E3?
Then E3 you get canceled. To skip. Then you get to skip.
Okay, I'm in on this plan.
That does free up February to focus more on Final Fantasy VII Remake, if everyone was planning on playing that.
Yep.
Do they, or Ori and the Will of the Wisps.
And Animal
Crossing. And that's the reason why they delayed
it. That's not February.
That's March.
That's March.
Is, you look this up, I see.
I do. I keep...
He currently is.
I keep video game release dates.
The FF7 Remake, that's they have a marketing agreement with PlayStation, I think, right? Like they're primarily associated with PlayStation.
Yeah, I don't think it's officially been announced for Xbox yet, but some box art leaked.
I may be mistaken on that. But, you know, my point is maybe it wasn't such an uncomfortable, horrible discussion at all. Maybe it was just like, we could use a couple more months to polish it up. They already have a big PlayStation associated game coming out in Q1. So maybe they're just like, push.
Usually people don't care about game delays anymore because it just makes a game better. But around 2020 for next gen has a lot of other speculations that you can make. So I think that's the only reason why it's kind of more significant.
Game delays also used to be, I just remember being heartbroken. It was always Zelda. And then it was always delayed like 18 months.
Year after year after year.
Yeah.
Some like Twilight Princess was delayed over and over and over again until they had another console out and then they had to release it for both.
Yeah.
So 3 months. Okay.
Sam, I see you've pulled up the Wikipedia page for 2020 in video gaming.
Yeah. And like it's really funny because the other games that were out in February also got delayed today.
What? Which ones?
Well,
like Gods and Monsters?
Gods and Monsters. Watch Dogs. Sure. And then Watch Dogs is early March, like March 6th.
Yeah.
So.
Ubisoft announced at least three game delays and then also sort of announced some underperformance of its recent titles like Ghost Recon Breakpoint and even The Division 2.
The game delays specifically are now they don't have new dates. They're in a quarter of their fiscal year.
So Ubisoft delayed Watch Dogs Legion, Rainbow Six Quarantine, which I don't know. I mean, I even forgot that was announced at E3. It's a new game, not a part of Rainbow Six.
What is it?
Yeah, it's a new game.
Okay.
We're just explaining what it is.
Is that the alien
it's
one?
It's just a new. I don't think so. Okay. Yeah, is it?
I thought it was like a supernatural Rainbow Six. I may have dreamed that part.
It's a cool dream.
Also Gods and Monsters, which was announced at E3. And we don't really know much about other than it gives us sort of Breath of the Wild vibes.
Yeah, but like that game when it was announced and then we got that release date, it's like, well, we haven't even seen that game.
Exactly.
How could it possibly have a release date that early?
They jumped the gun on giving the release date for that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So those three games are now delayed to whenever.
And then the fiscal year starts in March for
Ubisoft.
Ubisoft.
Okay. Yeah, so. Well, I mean, so, but just still, that's 12 months.
Or sorry, I mean, April. So those could still come out in April, May, June.
Sure.
But probably, you know.
You're right. It's an alien parasite.
Yeah. In Rainbow Six Quarantine.
Yeah. So that's why they're quarantine zones and you're fighting off the mutated whatever.
You got to quarantine the aliens. You can't let them just go wherever they want.
They're not allowed here.
If we're on another planet, we're the aliens.
That's true.
It's true.
What about the moon?
I don't know.
I mean, we're still aliens on this set. They're on our planet, though.
I want
to
see a game where we're the aliens invading and just fucking with people on another planet. Mm-hmm. Like we're abducting them, doing experiments on them.
Sure.
We build UFOs just specifically because that's how we've connoted it in our minds. They're just saucers.
They have myths about these two-legged, two-armed, weird aliens coming down, messing with them.
The astronauts that went to the moon had, you know, the normal bacterial processes going on in their bodies, and a bunch of things were born in them that came back here that were like technically moon-born.
Hmm.
So we've already brought back aliens.
They have moon bacteria.
That's true.
Those things were born and raised on the moon.
Anyway, Ubisoft.
I want to go back to this.
Put a pin in it.
Okay.
Come back to it later. Right. Delayed those three games, and then they announced hardships for Ghost Recon Breakpoint and The Division 2. Yves Guillemot, he of Ubisoft, the Ubisoft daddy, said in a financial statement today, we have not capitalized on the potential of our latest two AAA releases. Mm. For Ghost Recon Breakpoint, while the game's quality appeared on track based on E3, Gamescom previews, and our latest internal playtests, critical reception and sales during the game's first weeks were very disappointing. As we have done with past titles, we will continue to support the game and listen to the community in order to deliver the necessary improvements. And that's interesting because Ghost Recon Wildlands was one of the best-selling games of the year when it was released, I think 2016.
It took the year to kind of get there, right? It was a slow burn.
No, it wasn't a slow burn.
Okay, so it was popular.
It was released in like March, and then it was like the best-selling game of the year until whatever Call of Duty came out fall. Okay. So it's crazy.
I mean, I've talked about this on Scoop before, but Ubisoft, more than probably any other company, I trust to stick by a game like Breakpoint and like, you know, iterate on it, improve on it. Like, they do games as a service better than anybody, in my opinion. And their willingness to, like, they're still doing For Honor content. They're still, you know, they support their games. You know, Rainbow Six is really the one that crystallized this and kicked it off for them. So I don't know. Like, if EA were like, yes, you know, we're going to go back and retool and retinker, like, I'd be like, I don't know if I trust you, but Ubi, I give them the benefit of the doubt.
Well, the funny thing is they mentioned specifically, like, he called out live service games and doing a sequel to them is a difficult thing to convince people to come on board for. So even despite that pedigree, it's just a kind of
I thought that was really interesting. I'll read his quote here. It seems like Ubisoft is learning some lessons that maybe other publishers of games as a service could learn. He said, Ubisoft has also identified three main reasons behind this underperformance. First, it is harder to generate interest for a sequel to a live multiplayer game when prior iterations benefited from years of optimization. Consequently, we need to make sure there's more time between each iteration of live games. Second, our strategy of introducing gameplay innovations in our games has had a very positive impact on our brands. However, to win over players, these innovations need to be perfectly implemented in order to offer an optimal experience. This has not yet been sufficiently the case with Ghost Recon Breakpoint. So I don't know. It seems like
that's pretty interesting.
Games as a service are fairly new to the industry, and publishers are starting to learn that they can't sequelize them as often as they do or like more traditional games.
World of Warcraft learned that, 10 years ago? You know?
If you're going to release a sequel, like, it needs to be so different, so fresh feeling.
Yeah, that otherwise, like, it's like...
He mentioned that too, actually, in his statement too.
Like, why isn't it just, you know, why is Breakpoint not just, you know, more content being piled on top of Wildlands? Is it different enough and revolutionary enough to be a whole new
sequel? You remember the first time you guys felt like a sequel might have been, like, the wrong choice versus DLC? Because for me, it was Left 4 Dead. I was like, I remember the conversation just made like, why are they doing Left 4 Dead 2? DLC already existed and everybody was getting it all the time. And then it was just like, I love Left 4 Dead 2. But, like, there was no reason for that to be a separate disc.
You know, we took Left 4 Dead 1 off our list to replace it with Left 4 Dead 2 because it's the superior game.
It is. But it also, Left 4 Dead just could have ended up being the superior game, too, if they had just stuck by it. You have thoughts on this?
You know my thoughts on this.
I think, for me, it was Uncharted Lost Legacy, which is amazing, by the way, and everybody should play it. But it was the first example I can remember of, like, this middle of the road, like, probably started life as DLC, but then grew in scope and complexity.
So I think that was like a budget priced.
But then it's like, then Assassin's Creed did it with, like, standalone DLC too. And it sort of, and Dishonored, that was standalone DLC. They're sort of like pseudo sequels. Like, they're always really cool because they always build on, you know, sort of the core game. But, they exist in kind of a weird space.
Yeah. Well, publishers have their ups and downs. Ubisoft was on a high for a while because they really sort of reinvigorated the Assassin's Creed franchise with Origins and then Odyssey, probably the best Assassin's Creed has ever been. Of course, Rainbow Six Siege has been a huge hit for them. They stuck with For Honor. The original Division was eventually good. So it was like, they're just having a rough fall this year because they don't have anything else besides Ghost Recon Breakpoint. And that was kind of a dud.
I think the idea was always like, if we do a 2, then we'll have another audience we can attract in. But it doesn't seem to have worked that way for Destiny or for anything. It's like they've always kind of attracted that same sizable, great audience to kind of come back and play their second games.
Yeah.
Kind of expanding. These games never seem to expand with their iterations.
Yeah. I mean, Division 2 is interesting because unlike Ghost Recon, it's actually a very good game, an excellent game. But still was sort of unwilling to ride its wave of publicity and like it's a sequel to bring in new gamers.
It was a good try. Like, I mean, I think we covered that stuff, you know, in the lead up to it thinking like, oh, this will be, you know, a new big thing, but it just has the same audience and the same people are playing it. That's fine.
Well, now we can play a guessing game because Ubisoft says it's 2020 to 2021 fiscal year will still be a strong year with the release of 5 AAA games. So if those 3 delayed games, Watch Dogs Legion, Rainbow Six, Quarantine, and Gods and Monsters.
No, That wouldn't be a AAA game.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
That's, they're not considering that to be a AAA release?
I thought it was maybe. Okay. Well, I was always introduced as like kind of a smaller game. Mm-hmm. Like the Raymans of the world.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, then, so what are the other games? A new Assassin's Creed?
That's what I was going to. It's time for Assassin's Creed to come back.
Yeah. Ubisoft hits launches. Yep. They hit console launches. Mm,
that's true. That's true.
Like they're going to have console launch games for sure.
So Zombie U2?
I played Assassin's Creed 4 at PS4 launch. It was great. It was amazing.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think I played it on 360. But there's also Skull and Bones, which was delayed.
Indefinitely?
It's been delayed several times. It wasn't at E3 this year. Mm. There's also Beyond Good and Evil 2.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, that would be like a really good thing to have on PS5 at launch.
Yeah.
That'd be a really cool one. But
yeah,
I don't know where it is.
But is there anything else of Ubisoft that we know of?
There's a bunch of like, you know,
surely not a Just Dance. Well, do they consider a Just Dance game to be a AAA game?
Yeah, that's just a expected game.
I mean, yeah.
I don't know. I can't wait for Assassin's Creed to come back. Love the new direction.
I like counting on Ubisoft to actually introduce new franchises every E3. They always have something that's a little bit new and you know that they might even be AAA. So maybe they're going to introduce something new.
Rayman.
Yep.
Rayman is on Apple Arcade.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's Crazy Rabbids.
Let's move on. This was Sam's ringtone in college?
Not a ringtone, pre-ringtone. This is my, you know, like tape answering machine.
Your answering machine.
This is what it'd play.
Skater Die 2.
Called my house in college.
Which just has some awesome voice samples.
Yeah, it's a really, really cool free skate, like half pipe in that game for like coming out in 1990.
Skate or die. Fallout 76. Oh, man. Oh, my gosh. The game is a year old now, and it's still a train wreck. There's still just bad news coming out about this game.
But people are playing it.
Well, people are playing. I think a small group of people playing it, and unfortunately for those people, those are people that are being like fleeced by Bethesda right now. So what's happening here is there's a new subscription model for Fallout 76. It's called Fallout First. It costs $13 a month or $100 a year in order to play in private worlds for you and up to 7 friends.
But why is that so expensive? You know why.
Well, I mean, because you're renting a server, I guess, for yourself, but it's still like...
But it's too bad you have to rent a server.
Why do you have to do that to play a game by yourself?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that people wanted to do that in this game since the beginning, you know?
Yeah.
And you still have to buy the game outright, which has been heavily discounted now. I think it was on Amazon for $16 yesterday.
Yeah. I think it's been like down to 12 is the cheapest I've seen it. Maybe 10.
I'll get you a server for half that.
The private server thing, like, look, I'm not in the business of defending Fallout 76. Bethesda dropped the ball and continues to sort of screw it up. The private server thing is overblown. Private servers in every game cost money. Hmm. They cost money in Minecraft. They cost money in any time you're in a shared private world.
But we play a lot of games that I completely agree with you, that do all the things that they're talking about without having to have a private server. Right? I should be able to play with 8 friends in a game.
Yeah, but that's not true. Like, not in a consistent shared space that, like, your customer... Like that world exists if no one's in it. Like, that's different than just being in a private game lobby in, like, Gears of War or Halo or something. Like, you have a persistent... You have data on a server that's, like, being stored. Like, that costs Bethesda money.
I think the problem here specifically, too, is that nobody's enjoying... I mean, there are a fraction of people that are playing the game, but it doesn't substantiate itself enough. Like, you know, Minecraft can get away with this kind of thing, but can Fallout 76? Like, does it warrant that? So there's a bit of an issue around the messaging. And then also around the messaging is that Pete Hines was specifically saying that all the rollout and the features, aside from cosmetic microtransactions, would be free. That was the idea, and they had to walk that comment back a few weeks ago or something around that timeline.
It is complicated because along with private servers comes implied mod support. Like, you're in your own private space, you're not in a public game world, so they implied, like, oh, yeah, maybe we're going to let people mod their private game, which is something that people desperately wanted in the base game. And so now it is... potentially locking support for mods behind this pretty expensive subscription.
Yeah.
And so that's a part that's like worse feeling.
It's just like, if you are still playing Fallout 76 today, like, you're a diehard fan, like, Bethesda should be rewarding those people, right? Rather than like charging them $100 a year just to do what they want to do in their game that they bought.
A very parallel situation to making a bunch of Destiny players buy a second game, even though they could be updating Destiny. It's like, why are you doing that to these people? Like, you should be, you know, supporting them and then attracting people in different ways. And this seems like a weird thing to pull to attract new people to play Fallout. It's like,
yeah,
you're going to
yeah.
pay a lot more and, you know, you've already heard a bunch of bad stuff about this game.
Well, also,
why didn't they just cut their losses and make a freaking Fallout game?
Well, yeah.
This was supposed to pay all the dividends. They yeah, need to try to save it. Yeah.
Trying to dig out of the hole, yeah, you think?
Exactly. They delayed the DLC. It was supposed to come out this year, the DLC that adds NPCs back into the game. And now it's coming out, I think, Q1. Or I don't know if they dated it, but like, just, you know. That's still coming. And that's actually like, I've had it in the back of my head that I'm like, I've been wondering for months. I'm like, how bad could Fallout 76 be now in fall 2019? Like when it launched, everyone was so mad. And, you know, there's all these, you know, meme-y videos of all the bugs and stuff. And it's like those bugs were patched months ago and NPCs and quests and like proper Fallout-y stuff is coming next spring. So I'm kind of like, I don't know. Maybe I'll wait till that patch comes out and then I'll report back on GameScoop. I'm going to play Fallout 76 and let you know what I think.
I mean, I know
you're on the hook now.
I know it has its fans. Like our own Mark Medina has had a lot of fun in that game. You know,
I suspect that now that it's more stable and not as buggy, that it's actually like probably fine, like probably pretty okay, fun to play.
Well, the funny thing, so we ran a story the other day that was Fallout 76 does have its players and its defenders. Mm. So there's the, like, there's a subreddit for Fallout and then there's a subreddit specifically for Fallout 76. And even those defenders now are taking umbrage with this, and for good reason. I pulled out one quote from the roundup that we did, and it was from a player who said, "I've stuck with Fallout 76, believing Bethesda was acting in good faith toward players' feedback. More stash space, ways to extend food life, and other requests were highly publicized. I believe this feedback would be used to make the game better for all players. To take that feedback and monetize it by providing the requested features via microtransactions is not acting in good faith." And so that's a really fair point.
Well, we didn't even talk about that. That's separate than, like, 3 days ago, they released an announcement where they said, "Hey, remember where we said we were only going to charge for cosmetics?" They walked that back. And that was a separate announcement and a separate press release from the private server thing. So they said, I think their Atomic Shop, like that's their premium Atom store, Shop, previously used to be only cosmetic stuff. And now they changed it. Now it's
they
more
said they
stats
reassessed.
Based
I actually have Pete Hines' quote from that blog post. When he walked it back, he said, "Our approach to these items at launch was to keep them purely cosmetic. Mm-hmm. But after looking at all the data, it became clear that to consistently deliver content that keeps Fallout 76 fresh and exciting for all, we need to rethink our approach to the Atom Shop."
I think that's actually crappier, worse news than the private server thing.
Well, that's what people are interpreting this as, like a new feature that they would expect to be part of that promise that he made way back when, that everything would come free.
Yeah.
And then there's the fact that in my mind, just $100 a year, $13 a month to play by yourself in one game just objectively is not a good value compared to Xbox Game Pass, PlayStation Now, $10 a month to access, you know, dozens, hundreds of games. Like it's just
including
like
a bunch of Fallout.
Way too much to play on, to spend on one game.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's the best playground out there, Minecraft, then like people consider private servers and they work them out. But it's like, this is not the best playground out there. It's just surprising.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think about that in the context of like streaming services.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I do have a conspiracy theory.
Oh, cool.
About this. Bethesda only had one game this fall. It was Doom Eternal and that got delayed till next spring. That left Bethesda with no game this fall and no new revenue source. So they crunched some numbers. They say we have X amount of people that are dedicated to Fallout 76. Call it 10,000 people. We think that they will be willing to spend this money. If 10,000 people pay $100 a year, that's $1 million for Bethesda that they get this fall. You know, that's just, I have
that's
no idea
like
what
the
numbers
theory.
Are.
It's just like they can count on suckers to pay this money. Like it's really cynical, but like we know companies do that. I'm not saying anything about Bethesda doing that. But like that's absolutely a philosophy by which game companies make money, usually mobile games.
Because it was surprising to me that they delayed Doom Eternal because like Bethesda's fine. It's got enough money. It doesn't need any money this holiday 2019 season. I thought that
Nobody's
was crazy.
Nobody's got bills to pay, man.
I mean, like,
that money doesn't come out of thin air.
Yeah.
Or it's like even if they have, you know, a cash pillow and everything, everything's fine. They also just have shareholders that they have to just make it seem like they're making money too all the time. That's just the nature of corporations.
Yeah, they're almost ZeniMax.
Yeah.
I actually don't know, like, can you buy like ZeniMax shares? Like, is it privately owned?
Nobody knows.
I don't actually know. That's interesting.
Anyway.
I'll look up ZeniMax right now.
It's been nothing but bad news.
This is not stock advice.
For Bethesda for a while now. Does it make you worried for Elder Scrolls 6?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's too bad. But Skyrim
counterpoint. I'm not me. I'm not worried about that.
You're not worried about it.
No.
Well,
wow. You still have like a giant team of single player developers that
nothing but
have
confidence in Bethesda
for 20 years.
What's
I don't care. Like it's not like the people that made my favorite Fallout games made Fallout 76 necessarily. I don't even know that that's true.
But Bethesda's always had a willingness to, like, they did Horse Armor.
Yeah.
They were the first example and the first franchise ever to have like a really emblematic example of like shitty, hostile to consumer DLC. And like they eventually kind of fixed it with Skyrim, which had really great and notable DLC and, you know, support for that game for like 8 years. Like it's unbelievable. But like they have displayed a willingness to not protect and take care of their player base.
But they're not the only ones either that have like made a lot of missteps because it's just they're trying to figure this stuff out, trying to make money for themselves, which I can understand. But
like Elder Scrolls is not some sacred, like, yes, it will have, like, they're not like no microtransactions, you know, no gameplay changing, you know, benefit DLC. Like they're kind of the opposite.
Yeah.
ZeniMax is privately owned.
Interesting.
I saw an article from 2010 where like they're being courted heavily by investors right now, but that was from 2010.
All right, let's move on to a better Fallout game. This is Super R-Type, and the track is called Wet as a Fish.
Oh, one of those underwater levels?
Yeah, probably.
Are there underwater levels in R-Type? I don't
know. There always are.
Yeah, and there's always one where you're like inside some animals, colon.
Abadox style.
It's a funky little bass line there.
Yeah, that slap bass from Super Nintendo is so funny.
Let's share what we've been playing. And I know some people can't share what they've been playing, but I can because I've been playing The Outer Worlds and it's great. I love it. And I think everybody should play it.
Do you have a crazy character build?
I don't know if it's crazy. What do we mean by crazy?
I've just like been reading that the game really supports like role playing a character to a degree that RPGs
describe your character
often don't.
I don't know. She's just like a bounty hunter. Like, okay. You don't have a past.
What's your class? Like, how are you?
There aren't classes.
What's your play style?
I like to sneak around as much as I can. But you know, when that fails, I go in guns blazing.
Okay.
It's just every game. This is obviously made by Obsidian, the guys that did Fallout New Vegas and KOTOR 2. And it totally gives me old school Fallout and KOTOR vibes.
Why the KOTOR?
For like the space travel, traveling around to different planets and meeting new alien species. And
yeah. Does it feel like a big like new world that is unusual and fun to kind of learn?
Yeah, for sure. It's different from, so Fallout is like one giant map and these are a bunch of smaller different maps on different planets that you can travel to. So in that respect, it feels a little bit more like Mass Effect, I guess.
Or Borderlands?
Just the newest Borderlands is the first one that introduced.
Mass Effect's areas were never big enough for me. But I like everything about them. They weren't ever that open world thing until I think Andromeda had that, but I didn't play Andromeda.
So do you like the combat is semi real time? Like it's almost actually VATS-ish.
Well, yeah, you have the ability to slow down time.
Yeah.
Which is nice. I still prefer VATS because I like the target.
And then that runs out and then you have to kind of real time combat. Is that how it works?
Yeah. Okay.
Do you like it? Does the real-time combat like actually work pretty well? It's like a shooter, it's okay.
Yep. You have all ranged and melee weapons, and you can use elemental effects on your ammunition and on your melee weapons. You want to give them plasma or electricity or acid.
Are there aliens?
Lots of aliens.
Hella cool? Aliens. You're
lots
an alien.
Of
yeah.
That's true.
Define alien. Well, we're back to it. Okay. So
Obsidian's a company I really root for, like, even though they've been in the news for some not great things over the last year or two, but like, you know, Pillars of Eternity, you know, Bastions and people upholding, you know, sort of old school RPG ideals. They're a company I like to see succeed. You know, they were bought by Microsoft. So
yeah, I mean,
it'll be interesting to see.
Maybe Outer Worlds 2 will be a Xbox exclusive. Who knows? But
surely will be, right?
It's like, it's just like what I love to do in video games. I'll get a quest mission that'll lead me to a new planet. When I arrive on the planet, I've got a beacon that I need to go to, but I don't go there. I walk around, I talk to everybody, I get all the side quests,
the explorers,
investigate all the buildings, open up all the cupboards, steal all the stuff, nice. Go do all the side missions before, clear out that whole planet before I move on to the next planet.
Is there a limit to your inventory?
Yeah, you do get over encumbered.
And I've been, that.
I know. So it does have the encumberment system.
You spend a lot of time in your encumberment menus.
Yeah, a lot of time breaking stuff down into parts.
Okay. Damon, this is important. Can you walk around and explore the interior of your spaceship? You
sure can.
Yes.
And you get companions, and your companions have their own little quarters.
Love it.
And
that's
then
great.
Some of them want to sex you, and some of them want to sex other people, and they want your help sexing the other people.
Great.
Yeah. Aw, giving back to the community.
Yeah.
And I like that the game, some people have phrased this as a negative, but it's actually not 80 hours, right? Like, it's a little bit more compact. Like, not that it's short or unsatisfying, but Dan covered it in his review. Like, it's a length that feels good, like a good 30, 40 hour RPG. I'm like, that is perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when Obsidian was kind of being careful in the marketing phase to say, like, this isn't going to be Fallout size, so please do not expect that, because they were worried about, like, overhyping the game. Did you feel like it met your expectations at least?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even finished with it, but I must be 20 hours at least, and I've only explored a quarter of the planets, but I am pretty exhaustively, you know, doing all the side quests and exploring.
It's cool that there's that many explorable planets. I do like
and that many
variety.
Details. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. If there are any complaints I'd have, it'd be that the writing is great, the voice acting is great, but the like facial animation is, it's like the actor's giving a great performance, but the face, they're like just dead eyed, just staring at me, and their mouth is just kind of like.
Maybe that's an alien race thing.
Yeah, no, they're people.
Maybe that's how. Oh.
They're people. And then like, there's like, you know, it's super
people
fun.
From the moon.
Yeah. It's super fun. But when I think about some of the older Fallout games and KOTOR, they're like moments that I remember, and I haven't encountered anything so far that I think, well, I'll be remembering years from now as like a great moment. But it, you know, I have been having a blast with it. In the very first area, there's a situation that one of the very first things you have to deal with that's very similar to the Megaton situation in Fallout.
Yeah, I read that in Dan's review.
It's like,
that's cool.
Did you blow it up?
Did
you do the bad thing or the good thing?
I totally did the bad thing.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah, I did the bad thing. But they make it pretty easy because the good people, turns out, are into some weird shit.
Yeah.
So
that's always the case.
Everyone was bad
always
all
cannibals.
Along.
They're always cannibals. Yeah, secretly cannibals. I'm really excited to play this.
It's super fun. It's super fun.
Would you call it a Damie game?
Absolutely a Damie game.
But not an official Damie game.
It hasn't won a Damie yet.
Okay. We had to clear that up in the office the other day because Damon said, this is a total Damie game.
The Damies are...
I said, what did it win?
The Damie Awards are different.
It's a very prestigious award ceremony that's held in December.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's a Damie game, a game that I love.
Were you aware that there's a separate award ceremony happening in parallel to your...
I know. Were you competing with the IGN Awards? Like, come on.
Not competing. No, no, no.
You're in trouble now, Damon.
No. People take the Damies much more seriously.
That's why there's no competition.
Yeah. Does anyone else have a game they've been playing that they would like to share?
I've been playing a lot of Manifold Garden.
Is that an Apple Arcade game?
Yeah, I mean, it's on Epic. It might be an Epic exclusive, but it's on like PC and stuff as well.
Okay.
It's amazing. It's a first-person puzzle game where it's got sort of two, you know, twists or main conceits. One is which you can make the floor or wall, any surface can be the ceiling. Like you can flip your orientation at any time. And that's used for a lot of puzzle solving. And the other one is that it's like non-Euclidean space. So like you go into a room and then it's bigger on the inside, right? And it looks like an M.C. Escher drawing come to life where it's these impossible spaces that don't...
Is it like pretty?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Oh,
it's beautiful. But I also find everything tiles like infinitely, right? Like if you fall, you'll fall forever and then you'll eventually fall on the ceiling of where you fell from. So like it all just repeats over and over.
A PSP game that was like really black and white, and like you would walk through the geometric puzzles that way, and sometimes you'd end up around the outside. Remember?
I don't remember.
It's black and white.
It is like that, but this is first person and sort of Portal esque in the sense that it really breaks your brain and makes you think about 3D space in a brand new way. Those infinite environments actually fill me with some sense of, I clearly have some phobia that I didn't know I had. Like, It's not a scary game, but like those environments fill me with kind of a sense of like dread and unease because they go on forever. They never stop. And like it definitely sort of freaks me out a little bit.
You're never going like a free fall space experience.
Yeah. And I think it's because like they can't exist in reality. So I have a hard time like containing that in my mind. But I'm right at the end. I stopped last night right before. I'm pretty sure is like going to be the final sort of gauntlet. And I love it. I have nothing bad to say.
You might be an Android.
What's it called again?
Manifold Garden.
And Compute.
Manifold Garden.
And I'm playing it on Apple Arcade on my Apple TV with a paired PS4 controller, so it feels just like a console game. I know it's on PC too. I don't know what else it's on.
Cool.
Edgy title.
Sam and Tina, are you going to hold your tongues for right now?
No comment.
Okay.
You played Ms. Pac-Man. You
want to talk about Ms. Pac-Man? Yeah.
This new game, it's great. Mm. You know,
it's real fast. There's pretzels
to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. You should also, Damon, I played through another Apple Arcade game, a card battling RPG called Cardpocalypse.
Cool.
And then the card battle system is a lot like Hearthstone.
All right.
And it's kids playing a card game. And so what's funny about it is the kids, like they put stickers on their cards and make their own cards and house rule the game and change the rules of the game. So it really leans into the concept that this is kids playing a collectible card game in a school. And so.
And it's on Apple Arcade?
I'm playing it on Apple Arcade. It is also coming to Steam.
It's Cardpocalypse?
Yeah.
All right.
It's made by the Guild of Dungeoneering developer.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. 1 in 5 Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Justin sings this all the time in the office.
I really do.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners. Oh, this song legitimately just puts a smile on my face.
What game is it from?
Yoshi's Island.
That's right. That's right. Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Jeremy from Ontario did. Jeremy says, I have a question regarding cross-generation games.
Can you say hi to CJ while you're up there for us?
Yep.
Just by the way.
Find him.
I've seen you guys touch on the subject, but not address it completely. Once the PS5 and Scarlet come out, do you think many physical games will have just one version? For example, would it make sense for Madden to be labeled PS5 with small print that says also works with PS4? This just seems to make business sense, IMO. Keep up the good work. I love you guys. My 6-month-old daughter is sure learning a lot about video games during our morning routine.
I don't understand. So wait, it's a PS5 game that also works on PS4?
That's what he's asking, because traditionally, during a console transition, they'll put out, you know, those games, a different version for each platform.
Yeah, so it's like you can get, you know, when you buy it for a while, when you bought a Blu-ray, you also get the DVD inside of it.
But wouldn't it be a PS4 game that's also playable on your PS5? Wouldn't it happen that direction?
Yeah.
Why so? Why?
Because the PS5 is presumably going to be backwards compatible.
Yep. And they wouldn't make a PS5 exclusive.
Like
how,
you don't think they want to like get people on board with PlayStation 5?
I'm just trying to wrap my head around, how would a PlayStation 4 play a PS5 game?
Well, if it's all just a dual layer Blu-ray.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But they wouldn't let that happen because they want to sell PS5s.
Do you think the disc medium has to
be? So you just think they just wouldn't do that?
Even if they could, they wouldn't.
I don't even think, doesn't the PS5, I think it's confirmed to use I forget the official name for it, but the Blu-rays that are high storage.
Says the optical drive will use 100 gig discs.
Yeah.
And be able to play 4K Blu-ray media discs. So is that a higher capacity than PS4? I actually don't know.
Yes.
Okay. Well, then I guess it's not possible then.
But the yeah, you're right. The idea though is that why are we, you know, getting, why sell two different packages that with the same game in it in those launch years, right? Mm.
Wait a minute. What? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Well, you're saying like why? Yeah, just why have two?
They want to sell people. There's two different audiences.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know.
And the PS5 audience will be much smaller than the PS4 audience, so they have to address the PS4 audience. But then the PS5 people also want something to play on the new console.
Why? The question is, why would they sell something twice when they could sell it once?
Yeah, it's obvious, right?
Yes.
I mean, they'd sell it twice in making a PS4 game resellable on or repurchasable on PS5. I see that happening for sure.
Yeah.
The cross-gen stuff is always messy, right? Like there's no, like we talked about it with Assassin's Creed 4. Like I bought it on PS4.
Yeah.
It was also on last gen. Like everyone has a choice to make and it's not always the most consumer friendly thing in the year that a console launches.
We ran a poll on IGN about what you think is the most important feature you've learned about the PS5. And it was overwhelmingly backwards compatibility, which is really funny because there was, I forget where this came from, but I think we talked about it at GameScoop. There's a concept from publishers and console makers that they always hear from the audience that they want backwards compatibility, but then they get to see who uses it, and they don't, nobody uses it.
There's never a bigger,
what is up with that?
There's never a bigger mismatch between people, what they say they want and then how they're actually using their device. I believe that backwards compatibility matters a ton in launch year when the PS4 is still super relevant.
Yeah, and it just falls off.
Yeah, I don't care
about playing. Actually, didn't we run a poll and all of the next-gen features, backwards compatibility was the one that won?
I just said that.
That's what he just said.
Oh, sorry.
There used to be.
I was listening to Jess.
I know you were. That was my segue into talking about this way. And I think it's funny that that if that's the case, I think it's a kid upsell. I think they're like, but mom, I can play my old games.
There used to be a belief that the only people that cared about backwards compatibility were mom and dad who were reluctant to buy a new console.
Yeah.
It plays the old games.
But to today's gamers, at least they claim that backwards compatibility is super important to them, whether or not they use it in practice or not. I don't know.
I think it's great.
I believe it gets hugely used that first year.
Yeah,
and then less and less as the old games start to feel older.
And for this year, we might need our PlayStation 5s to play a bunch of PS4 games that are coming out at the end of the year, too. Like it's going to be silly to have a PS4 out to play possibly Ghosts or like whatever is going to be.
Because everyone's PS4s are breaking, too.
Yeah. Is that true?
I mean, I anecdotally, yes. I feel like they're kind of like winding down.
My PS4 controller died this week. Jonathan Dornbush just reminded me that God of War 2 came out like months after the PS3 came out.
That's so weird.
For PS2. So God of War 2, you had to keep your PS2 around or backwards compatibility to play on your PS3.
I'd like to see, I understand that companies are running a business and they can sell a PS4 version of a game and a PS5 version of the game as like sort of crappy as that is. Like, I get it. I'd like to see them split the difference and offer like an upgrade. Like I want to play Cyberpunk on my PS4 and then pay $20 or $30 to get like the upgraded PS5 version when the PS5 comes out.
That'd be really great.
I don't want to have to rebuy it for $60.
Yeah.
I think sometimes when like those come out and they're like the HD versions, they're a little bit cheaper.
Sometimes.
Not all the time though.
Let's move on and talk about the Switch for a minute. Okay. That's from Rambo. It's the mission theme in the jungle.
It's obviously from Rambo.
This is Cody. Cody says, "What's up, guys? I love your show. It makes my boring job bearable at least one day a week. I know the one thing the Switch is missing compared to the Wii U has been dual screen functionality. Most, if not all, of the Wii U ports have found ways around this to make the games playable with little to no issues. Do you think Nintendo would ever consider adding the ability to make the Switch Lite usable as a controller? Super Mario Maker 2, while not being a port, is the only game, in my opinion, to suffer from losing that second screen. Nintendo has shown us time and time again that they can make their hardware function in ways we never would have thought possible. Labo and Ring Fit Adventure, using the IR sensor as a heart rate monitor, are the best examples I could think of. I own two OG Switches now and really have no reason to buy a Switch Lite, although I want to. If they found a way to make this a possibility, I think many hardcore Nintendo fans would consider dropping another $200 on a Switch Lite. Thanks for reading."
Ignores the idea that you could just have your Switch be a screen and your television be a screen. Like, but Nintendo's so resistant to that. Well, they made a
Nintendo
dock
won't use
to hide the screen from you.
In the dock.
That's true. Yeah.
It's so funny.
You can't, it communicates with your television via HDMI. And so there's not a way to have it hooked up to your TV and have it in your hand as a second screen right now.
Yeah. But correct me if I'm wrong. The Switch Lite, since the Joy-Cons are just part of it, they don't move, it does not have any wireless capabilities, so there'd be no way for
it has wireless capability. You could connect it over Wi-Fi to another Switch and then
connect it Well,
you could hack.
I guess maybe you'd have to hack it that way, but there's
This is maybe my ignorance speaking. I don't know what protocol is it. Are they Bluetooth connected? Is that how the Joy-Con communicate with?
Well, it's either that or Wi-Fi, and I don't think it's Wi-Fi because with Wi-Fi you do set up a local network.
You also don't have to.
Your phone can play music over a Wi-Fi network on speaker and stuff like that. But Blu-ray, it's just so much easier to set up Bluetooth.
Yeah. Now I'm second guessing this. It might be a proprietary Nintendo
and
wireless
there are
protocol.
Proprietary ones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a cool idea. Just his question of could the Switch Lite be a second screen for docked, television Switch games?
You have the two screens like this.
Yeah.
Ooh, that'd be fun too. Yeah, I think it's totally neat, but it'd be so niche and so limited that it would never feel essential.
Yeah. I don't miss having that second screen experience myself.
Then again, we hooked up 3 Game Boy Advances to a GameCube at one point in our lives, so.
I never did that.
To play Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles.
Yeah. It was so fun.
Or Pac-Man Versus.
I never did that.
And Zelda Four Swords.
Yeah.
It's called. Yeah, and Four Swords, I played all of those that way.
Same. It was great.
During that time, my friends wanted to come over and play Monkey Ball and Mario Kart Double Dash, but none of them had GBA, so we couldn't have done that stuff. Let's see. We can do one more email here.
Battletoads.
The pause screen.
It's great.
I was singing this. Is that what you found out the other day?
No.
Really?
This just plays in my head all the time.
Me too.
I love, there are a few NES games that have pause screen music. We were talking about in our lobby, we have an NES Classic hooked up and it was just playing Super Mario 2.
For 3 days.
And what's hilarious is I kept hearing it earworm different people. Pear came by and was just humming it.
And there's no timer, as Sam pointed out, so it'll just play forever.
It's just Mario standing there. It's not paused.
But pro tip, if you pause it, it mutes the melody.
Yeah.
You just get the drum and the bass track.
The drums, and I totally didn't remember that. So now I walk through and it's just playing it.
This is Jeff. He says, hello, my name is Jeff, and I am from a town in the middle of Kansas called Salina.
Oh.
I've become obsessed with video games ever since I got the PlayStation 1 and played Tony Hawk Pro Skater.
Cool.
Two of the biggest things I love in a video game is its compelling story and its unique music, both of which I found in the video game series Assassin's Creed. I've enjoyed the series up to Origins. I haven't played Odyssey yet because I haven't seen how it actually fits into the series. Jeff, play Odyssey.
Whoa.
The music, on the other hand, has put me in the feels so much that I listened to the soundtracks just before I got a tattoo of the logo. I don't think I'll ever find another game that will do that to me yet. Fallout is close. My two questions for you are, one, do you feel video game series and stories are falling off due to online gaming trends like Battle Royale mode? And what video game music puts you in your feels and makes you excited to play the game?
I really like how he phrases things.
Are stories going away because of online gaming trends like Battle Royale mode? No, I don't think so. I think there's room for multiplayer games as a service, and then also room for single player story-driven games like The Outer Worlds that I'm playing right now.
Yeah, a lot of developers have come out and specifically said they're still interested in pursuing games that have really interesting stories. And even if it's not in the AAA field, indie developers are obviously really interested in that kind of space too. So yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Nope.
Jedi Fallen Order is another game this fall that's going to have a story, whether it's good or not.
The Last of Us is a AAA title.
Last of Us.
Yep.
Oh, it was like 3 or 4 years ago where people were predicting that single player games are over. And it's just weird just getting them one after another. And they're just working so well and people talk about them and play them everywhere.
Yeah. But what video game music puts you in your feels, Justin?
I think Nintendo's done a really good job of balancing sort of the nostalgia with the new, Mario Odyssey did that. Oh, it's so good. It did it so perfectly with the celebration at the end of New Donk City. We're paying tribute to their roots while still remixing it and contextualizing it in 2019. It's great. I don't love the Metal Gear games, but I love the music. And it's the only piano, it's the only piano melody I know how to play. And my daughters have a little cat keyboard, which you also, I think, have now.
No.
Meow, 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 meow.
Yeah. And so I frequently meow, 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 meow
Sam, what puts you in your feels?
I don't like listening to video game music outside of video games.
Well, but you like some video game music.
Hell yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this a lot.
Is this your least favorite part of GameScoop then?
Yeah. No, what I don't understand is like there's like touring concerts and stuff and people are like cry and watch Final Fantasy music. I don't get that at all.
I wouldn't want to do
that. I think movie soundtrack music and game soundtrack music is really good because it's part of a overall art piece. And if you like that stuff outside of it, that's fine. I don't feel like it doesn't fit in my life very well. What I was going to say though, is I really like, so obviously old chiptune-y things are like really fun to listen to and they always work in their games. That's great. So I'm going to skip all over that. Modern games. I really like Sunset Overdrive. It did a thing where they hired this guy, Jeff Novak, who I know he's in a band called Cheap Time, which I really, really like. And he just did all of the music for it. And it's like, he did some with like a band and then some of it is kind of like songs. And then the rest of it's just like integrated in. It's just like guitar, bass, drums, like, completely out of nowhere. I don't know how this would have happened. This is a guy that's on like labels that my friends put out and stuff. And I was like, so proud of that when that happened. And it worked so well that I was like, hire musicians to score your games, either, you know, that are outside the orchestra world and just have like indie musicians do that. I think that's such a good idea. And I understand that people put pop music in games now and that's fine. And like, I think that's interesting too. But like, I think this idea of like someone scoring a game as a band or something is really cool.
Tina has something to say.
I have a lot of thoughts, actually. For one thing, I think people going, just to answer what you were saying, I think people go to the concerts because it's their video game music, but played with an orchestral band. And like, that's a different live music experience thing. I'm not much of a live person, live music person. So it's not my thing, but I think that's why people do it. For me, it's when the moment matches with the music, and like Red Dead 2 did something really cool with that, where there's all of this story buildup and then you get to this music and it kind of pans out and you're like watching the scene as you're riding over to one of the final kind of encounters. So that pairing works really well and it just kind of evokes that feeling very, very well. And then I sent over a Borderlands 2. It was from the first DLC that came out, the Pirate's Booty DLC.
Are you going to play it?
It's too long. It's like 5 minutes long, but
it's still up. We can play it.
Yeah. It goes through so many phases too. It's really cool.
It kind of sounds like this.
It's very loud. This is the mid phase. But yeah, this is like around the lighthouse part of the campaign. And it's just got so many different elements to it. And I think this is when you're leading up to like a big boss fight. I wrote an entire article just on this one song.
Ooh. Yeah. It's intense.
Yeah.
I have to give a special shout out to Final Fantasy 15, by the way. Like
the music,
that game, which, you know, I love, but has the soundtrack is incredible. I think it's one of the greatest achievements in video game soundtracks of all time. It's perfect and amazing, and it was overshadowed by all the other discourse around the good and bad around that game, and I think it's a shame. Like, it's amazing what that game does musically.
I think Ocarina of Time has the best music out of any game ever, integrated into the game better than anything ever. I love it so much, and I hate the idea of listening to that music outside of the game.
There's funny. Also like GTA and licensed music too. It's almost like a DJ is playing like a recorded set list for you. Like I kind of like the discovery of that too.
Every new GTA release is just like the soundtrack to those games.
Yeah.
We ran a feature.
Vice City was really good.
Yeah. So it was 5.
If you Google like IGN best musical moments in games, we ran that as a feature. There's all kinds of good ones like Kanye West playing in Saints Row when you're parachuting to take back your, I mean, it's a very silly game, but like just when it matches up, what a great feeling.
Control is a big music moment. And it's like a level that's like set to a really funny, like I think maybe Norwegian heavy metal song.
And
like we didn't want to talk about this around
which is
launch.
That band
like,
that was also in Alan Wake.
Considered it a spoiler. I don't know if it is. I don't know anything about the band.
I think there's
it's just like type stuff, you know?
Yeah, it matches the moment.
Yeah,
and gets you riled up for it. Unlike that one scene in Joker.
Unlike that one scene.
Did
in
you
Joker.
Guys see that? Right?
Yeah,
Damon did.
The dance down the stairs scene?
Yeah.
Oh, I liked that scene. You didn't like that one?
I liked the scene. I didn't like the music pairing.
Oh, it worked for me. It worked for me. For me, it's the 5 M's. Mega Man, Metroid, Maniac, Mansion.
Yeah. That's great.
The 5 M's, they call them.
That brings us to Video Game 20 Questions.
Okay.
Whoa.
Yeah. Our suggestion this week comes from
Castlevania from like 2010.
No, this is Metal Slug 4.
Whoa, look at those orchestra hits. Yeah. They're way ahead of their time.
Well, this is Nintendo DS.
Oh, okay.
I think, yeah. Well,
behind the times then.
Maybe that's not true, but it would be at least like a 2000 era game. Our suggestion this week comes from Robert in Florida. Let the questioning begin.
Is this on current gen consoles?
No.
Was this on consoles that came out before 2000?
Yes.
So I ask that because I keep on getting added about people saying, why do you guys only ask about years? Ask about console generations.
They can. Then we,
so when I did
that
both.
Was a cheat, yeah.
When they're on 20 questions, they can ask whatever they want.
That's true.
We're the contestants.
That's true.
We're the contestants.
Okay, so on consoles before 2000, did this appear on a Nintendo console?
No.
Was this on PlayStation?
Yes.
Okay. So PlayStation, PSX.
Is it an active IP?
Yes. That's 5.
So wait, what year did the PS2 come out? 2001?
No, PS2?
Yeah.
Oh, because, it came out in 2000, so this would be...
So PS1. It has to be a PlayStation 1 game.
Yeah, plus I asked if this was on PlayStation.
Well, I took that to mean...
I took that to mean just the... Yeah.
Oh, I took that to mean PlayStation 1.
The PlayStation, I should have said. Damon understood.
Mm. Cool. Was this game developed by Sony?
No.
Do you shoot things?
You sure do.
That's my
Did you say it was an active?
Pretty shooty, yeah. Huh?
Active IP, and yeah. You sure do shoot stuff.
Okay.
Someone else got it.
Probably not. Fine. Ape Escape.
I have a follow-up.
I don't think you shoot very many apes in that.
They all have to be put down.
That's what you're doing with them all?
Don't let them escape.
Is it a PlayStation exclusive?
Yes.
Okay. That narrows it down, kind of.
Yeah.
And it's still around.
But yeah. But
is it still a PlayStation exclusive?
What do you mean? What do you mean?
You said the series is still around. That was a question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of
You're asking
that
if,
up in,
if the IP, like yeah. as she put, is still a PlayStation exclusive?
Yeah.
No.
Oh.
It might be licensed.
So it was, and then, yeah.
Is it licensed?
No. Okay. That's 10.
Oh, dang. Did I ask where it was developed?
You asked if Sony developed it.
Oh. Which is a no.
Was this game developed in Japan?
Yes.
Shooty Japan.
Yeah.
That's now also
That's
on
kind
Xbox.
Of unusual, right?
Yeah, I can't really.
I don't think it's a first-person shooter at this point. So is this...
Could be Omega third. Boost.
Is this a shmup?
A shmup, no.
Okay.
So like a third-person action?
I can't even imagine what it is. There's so few first-person shooters.
I think there was like, like Medal of Honor and stuff like that, but like Japanese-made.
Yeah. Is this a first-person? No, I don't even want to ask that. Should we ask about maybe the type of graphics? Is this sprite-based? But you don't know the answer to this always, right?
Yeah.
We argue about
it.
I
get confused sometimes.
we talked about this.
Let's
offline at one point. What about? Can you answer if it's 3D?
It is 3D.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. No problem. Okay.
There's I developed in Japan. Never mind. I was gonna say this, and it's a PS1 and it's a PlayStation. Was a PS1?
It was. It's not anymore.
Right.
Are we in hard mode?
No.
Is there hard?
Shouldn't be in hard mode.
Okay.
Yeah. Unless you change the difficulty without me realizing.
Is it helpful to know if the developer is still around?
Well, I guess it could have changed hands, but it's still an active IP.
So it's like,
so I would assume.
I don't know, like Mega Man Legends. Like,
yeah, that came to Nintendo 64. Mm. I think it has, it could be that though, because it was called Mega Man 64 and that. But like,
should we do environments like real world?
It's probably like somebody that holds a gun and does stuff, right? And that includes Mega Man.
Yeah, that counts.
Is this a sci-fi game?
No.
Is Mega Man sci-fi?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
we don't have robot boys in our reality currently.
That we know of.
Yeah. That we know. That's a good point. Robot dogs, though. We got those.
I like sci-fi that is now in the past. Like in the distant future of 2010.
1990X.
Yeah. It's not sci-fi, huh?
Mm-mm.
Do you shoot?
I mean, is it like, does it take place in like Earth, like normal Earth, normal ass planet Earth?
That's your question?
Yeah.
It is. Yes, it's supposed to take place on Earth, and that is 15.
It could be.
Could be James Bond. Probably. I don't know.
No, that's a license.
Oh, yeah, right. The was developed in Japan. That was stupid. And the series is still active.
I can't even picture what this game looks like. I don't have, a perspective. Is it, a top-down
I
game?
Just keep coming back to third person. Should we narrow that down? I can't even think of one, though.
Yeah, I need the perspective a little bit, right?
Go for it.
Well,
You do it.
Yeah, you can.
That's the one you want. You asked. That.
You said it.
I said I'm thinking of a third person.
Is this a third? Is this a third played from a third person perspective?
No.
Great.
Well, that's very unusual.
Yeah. What is this? Some isometric thing we can't think
of? Or it could be an FPS, a PS1 FPS. We don't know.
What FPS exists right now that's cross console made out of Japan?
For PlayStation 1?
Yeah.
Just nothing. It could be, but it also could be, that's the Doom era of games. It's so unusual, but there are games like that. And then there's, first-person spaceship games. But that would be sci-fi. First-person tank games. First-person...
It not being third-person implies that you can't see your character at all. It's not side-scrolling or top-down or isometric. Mm-hmm. It implies that it's first person. Mm,
that's fair.
What if it's just like a really arcadey game?
Could be a Lycan game. Could be Time Crisis.
What's Time Crisis like?
It's like a Lycan game. Person. It's the one where you hide behind. It's an arcade game where you hide behind cover and then pop out and shoot guys. Made by Namco.
We could ask our arcade question.
Is this an arcade port?
No.
Well, goddamn.
I thought I was so clever there for a second.
Is it a gun based game? Do you?
I mean, what is that called? We shoot
Lycan games.
Wouldn't that be an arcade though?
Well, but there's Virtua Cop, which was Sega Saturn, but
I was not playing the hard name.
Dino Crisis, it's PS1, but that's third person. Oh, I felt so good about the light gun games, Damon.
Well, what about setting? Like, should we ask if there's a military based thing?
We didn't eliminate light gun game.
You didn't ask if it was a light gun game.
Well, we asked if it was Time Crisis.
No.
What did we asked if it was an arcade.
Oh, if it was an arcade port.
Mm. Could be Point Blank, which was also Namco. I don't think that takes place on.
Is that a military game?
No, that was just like a silly. It's basically like gun mini games where you're like shooting cans and keeping them.
Do we need to know if that's a military game?
That doesn't even narrow it down for me though.
Yeah, I know.
But I figure setting might help. Might spur somebody's memory.
Well, we know it's in like earthy setting.
Yeah.
It's good.
Military, I think, is helpful, yeah.
It'd be Lethal Enforcers.
Is it military themed?
No.
Great.
Back to square one.
Yeah. But at least the square one's not a military game.
We have one question left, right?
Yeah. Damon, I feel like, was trying to give us a hint by saying you didn't eliminate light gun.
I know. I was thinking that too.
But then it's not an arcade port. So I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, because Lethal Enforcers was. I don't know anything about. Does this use a weird peripheral?
It could be Redneck. Say that? It could be Redneck Rampage. Yeah. I don't think that's still active.
Does this use a PlayStation peripheral?
Does it use a PlayStation peripheral?
Like commonly.
In some territories, it did.
What? What is this hard mode nonsense? What are you doing?
There's like a Move controller component to it now.
Is it Rez? Although that's not on Earth.
Well, was that in PlayStation 1?
No.
Yeah.
We've arrived at the 20th question.
We should know this because if there's a peripheral that was like in Japan that was super weird that we didn't get here, how would we not? Man, I don't know what to do. Oh, no. I was going to say Typing of the Dead has a keyboard.
I mean, what we do, we lose. That's what we do.
Yeah. But was Typing of the Dead on PlayStation?
No, that was Dreamcast?
It was like a Dreamcast exclusive because of the keyboard. I mean, there's also the place. Was there like an eye or something for the PlayStation? Was there a camera thing?
Not PS1. That was also PS2. PS1's like old.
That's it seems weird.
It does seem weird.
Where do you think we went wrong, Damon?
You once again forgot what time of year it is.
Oh yeah, it's spooky, so we know that. But that's why, like, the House of the Dead was a really good line of questioning.
Yeah, but that's arcade.
You didn't pursue the light gun avenue.
That's probably it. Is a light gun game.
Well, and it could be House of the Dead that wasn't in arcades.
Yeah, but like it's not that I didn't pursue it. It's that if it's not an arcade port, I can't think of original PS1 light gun.
I mean, I think we got to light gun game.
It is a game that we've talked about on the show recently. A PS1 light gun game, Resident Evil Survivor.
That was
I've never heard of that.
Never going to get that.
We talked about it because we talked about all the bad Resident Evil spinoffs.
Yeah, but I don't remember what happens on the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Same. Yeah. I black out whenever I'm in here.
It only supported the light gun in Japan and Europe. In North America, you just had to move the cursor around the screen with the D-pad.
What was that Aerosmith light gun game where you used a D-pad? Revolution X?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
What's the game called again?
Resident Evil.
I'm not making a joke.
Survivor.
Survivor. Yeah. Yeah. I don't, come on, that's hard.
Yeah,
that's hard really mode. Hard,
Damon. I would say, except that we've talked about the game recently.
Who's we? That was like a month ago.
Everyone
at
on the
least.
Show. Yeah, when we did, when they announced the new.
Nobody here knows what that game is.
They announced the new Resident Evil spinoff. So like, we talked about all the other.
Yeah,
Resident
but that was
we didn't talk
ago.
About it. You talked about it.
That was like a year ago. Internet time.
With Mark Medina and CJ.
I know Tina was here.
That's true. I remember it now.
That's really hard. That's hard mode for sure.
All right.
Yeah. You let us astray.
You can let, you're going to be hearing from, you have to let, you have to talk to Robert from Florida. Robert from Florida can at you.
Yeah, he can. Robert, please at me.
Now I just want to play Time Crisis.
Or House of the Dead.
Resident Evil Survivor was not developed by Capcom. It was developed by this company called Tozei, which is like a ghost developer that assists with a lot of games and then doesn't put their name or their staff in the credits.
Sad.
I know. It's weird.
In the 90s, like after that was already established.
But except this game came out in 2000.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's wait, so you got that wrong from the start?
Nope. The console came out before 2000.
Oh, we got screwed on that question then.
Why?
Because if we would have said a game that came out before 2000, you would have said no. But we said, did this come out on a console that came out before 2000?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that'll...
This is why we don't listen to you, everybody that doesn't play 20 questions.
Yeah,
you're still
didn't
just
quite
thinking of PlayStation
it.
Games. I don't, like, if I had told you that game came out in 97, you wouldn't have blinked an eye.
I don't actually like that question, though, because there's like still Genesis games coming out like once a year. Like Dreamcast, new Dreamcast games are still coming out.
Well, first of all, I screwed up the question. It should have been, was this on PlayStation era.
You sacrifice it for the goofs.
Yeah, I did.
Well, also, like, we don't know
the big
what,
goofs in the sky.
What number generation each console is, right? Like, I don't know.
No.
Well, that's what
I never
like
think
say.
Of it. I there never. Like, think,
why don't you?
Oh,
ask
what,
gen
did this come
gen
out on
4?
Seventh generation consoles? I don't know. What's that? Is that the TurboGrafx-16? I have no idea.
We'll go back to your desk. We're going to show you what pixels and sprites and polygons are, and then we're going to talk about
that,
the console
like,
generations.
Then it's like I think of games like Einhander, and I don't know.
Stop thinking of Einhander.
I never am going to stop thinking about Einhander.
It's just, if Damon, what are you thinking about? It's always Einhander and then the Battletoads pause. Then, that's it. He's just sitting there.
That's all that's going on in here.
Wait, everybody, hold on. I need to think about this for a second. You got to turn that off.
It'll fade out in a second. That's all the scoops we have for you this week. Next week is spooky week. Oh my God, we forgot to bring our son out this week.
But that was,
it's
I
more
thought
appropriate
it was
for the other.
I said I was going to bring it out the rest of October.
I said I was going to ask about spooky games for the rest of October.
Should I go run get him?
Wait, we left our son alone. No, it's fine. It's fine. We're going to wrap up the show. We're running over time. We'll bring him out next week for Game Spook. Everybody get ready. We're going to tell us, Tina's going to read us a spooky story.
It's going to be really fun.
Understand this correct.
I haven't been working on it hard at all.
There are a lot of antics on the way.
Antics. Right?
So if you're not a fan of antics, go listen to the podcast Unlocked.
And if for some reason, like all of us are like, if we happen to be busy, we have some other people that can come in and host a show for us next week.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
So don't worry about that. That is all the scoops we have you this week. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Tina. My name is Damon. This is IGN Game Scoop, and we're out.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.